Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate it. Please follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just type in the Union Edge. And folks, I got to apologize to you. Our next guest, Joe Uihlein, we do not get on nearly enough. And the man is an awesome guy all the way around. Former Secretary Treasurer of the Industrial Union Department for the AFL-CIO. Current founding president and executive director of the Labor Network for Sustainability. And musician extraordinaire. Joe, welcome back to Union Edge.
Well, thank you. It's great to be back, and thanks for those kind words.
Joe, you definitely deserve it. Many years of awesome support for labor all across the spectrum. We appreciate what you're doing. What are you up to now?
Oh, we've got a lot of stuff going on, working with unions on climate change and other sustainability issues. And that's going great. We just had an amazing tribute last weekend to Pete Seeger, who passed away earlier this year. And we had 15 unions sponsoring the tribute, probably 8 or 9 environmental organizations, some peace organizations. It was really a celebration of all the great movements that Pete was a part of during his 70-plus years of activism. So, that was a big thing. And so there's a lot of stuff going on, both on the music and the labor front.
Joe, let me ask you this. We have a mutual friend, Mark Schauer, formerly of the Blue Grain Alliance. He's running for governor, good chance. He's jobbing it up there, and you listen to people talk about him in the crowds. It's a wonderful thing. Your thoughts, your feelings, we're losing a great union activist to the political spectrum in the world. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that?
Oh, we need him. We need him. It would be awesome if he could get elected up there. And, I don't know. We do lose him in one sense, but we gain him in another, and that's in a powerful political capacity. All my best wishes are with him on this one.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great guy. And, also here in Pennsylvania, we got somebody that's working towards governor, and he gets it. That's Tom Wolf. Joe, let me ask you this. It's like anything else right now. It's motivating people, getting them to the polls. What do we got to do? You know this game.
Yeah. Well, I think that it's really a big bottom-up organizing challenge, and we need to do more and do it better, focusing on the grassroots of our movement and mobilizing them. It's tough when we've had betrayals from Democrats. That kind of takes a little wind out of our sails. We have to get past those and focus on the candidates that best represent our interests. And 9 times out of 10, that happens to be Democrats. And so it's an organizing challenge, and it's not that different from, all the grassroots focus we put on strategic campaigns over the years and mobilizing people at the work site, working to rule, and it's similar. It's a lot of one-on-one union member talking to union member kind of campaigns.
Mm-hmm. Joe, you mentioned something. Sometimes our Democratic friends are our friends, and sometimes they aren't. Sometimes our Republican friends are our friends, and sometimes they aren't.
Yeah.
Is it time for a Labor Party?
I was a founder of the Labor Party back in the day with Tony Mazzocchi and others, and I do believe that labor needs its own independent political voice. I think, back then we were losing power and influence, and we were stronger then than we are today. So I don't know. I don't know if we have the power and the reach to form an effective party. There is a Working Families Party that is active in a few states now, and that's different than a Labor Party, but it's also independent from the Democrat and Republican Party. So I think we need to be looking at options in that direction.
Joe, do you think it's possible for somebody to get into even state positions, you know, state House, state Senate, without party support from either Republicans or Democrats?
I don't think it is right now. That's one of the problems.
Next steps for labor over the next 20 years, what do you think they should be?
Well, I've given this a whole lot of thought in the last few years, and I have some pretty firm beliefs on that. I think, one, we have to look at a wide variety of options to our current structure and focus. I'm a huge fan of collective bargaining, and I'm not in the camp that says that system is completely broken and we have to get away from it. I think it's a great system. We need to strengthen it. But I think we need to look at what these worker centers are doing, alternative forms of representation, winning improvements for working people in ways that are beyond the collective bargaining system. I think we can do both. I think we have to. I also think that we have to look really closely at what the jobs of the future are going to look like. And it may be people in labor are doing that. I haven't seen enough of it or as much as I think the focus should be, because the work site and work in America and around the world is going to change amazingly in the next 20 years due to what is now sort of the next wave of robotics and miniaturization of everything. Jobs are going to be changing a lot. We need to be looking at that.
I agree with you. I agree with you wholeheartedly on that one, Joe. You're talking about worker centers, which are labor supported, but it's not 100% labor. Strong mix in there with our houses of worship and other community organizations. Joe, what should labor's message be to the not yet union public? I mean, for 30 years, they've heard the rhetoric. They've heard the union thugs and union bosses smoking cigars. What should our messaging be?
Well, you know, I think we've done a better job at that in terms of messaging from working people, as opposed to only leaders being the ones who are out there all the time. But I think beyond that, I think our messaging needs to be one that a better world is possible, and labor has always been the strongest voice in getting us toward that. And I say that because I think most people think we're on the wrong track. You know, with the crash in 08, Wall Street may have recovered, but the rest of us didn't. We're still holding the bag from that trillion-dollar bailout of banks. And people, there is a sentiment. People are upset about it. So I think labor's role at the work site and beyond in terms of building a better society for everyone is a message that will strengthen organized labor because people will relate to that more directly.
I agree. Anything else that we in labor should be looking at doing right now in our communities, for our communities?
I think, you know, one of the things I feel strongest about in terms of labor is that our message of solidarity, which is really the bedrock of our movement, resonates beyond our movement. And in communities, if unions step forward as a voice for community betterment with solidarity at the core, we can extend workplace solidarity to human solidarity, and I believe tap in to a yet untapped force that could help turn this whole thing around. And that's what we need to do.
I think you're right. And Joe, I always go back to this one. Prior to the wall coming down in Berlin, two people that supported our brothers and sisters in Poland, in the shipyards, strongly and aggressively, because they knew the power of solidarity, because they knew the power of labor unions and what we could do together, was Ron Reagan and Pope John Paul.
Yeah.
Many of our Republican friends don't like to admit that, and many of our Republican friends don't like to admit that Ron Reagan was president of the Screen Actors Guild. and an activist in his union, and an activist for working people. But the long and short of it is we have the ability to do some truly wonderful things for a lot of people, and we got to work hard at doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think I would go back to Pete Seeger here and say that, you know, Pete once explained to me what he called his pomegranate theory of change. And this was many years ago, and at the time I'd never looked inside a pomegranate, but after he explained his theory, I went and got one. There are all these, you know, thousands and thousands of little seeds, and his theory was that change will come from us fertilizing all the seeds out there, and it's not just going to be big things top down. So his theory was little things bottom up. I think that's a really important lesson for labor, because that's where we got our strength initially. We got away from it a little bit. We're getting back toward it. I think we really need to cultivate that in as broad a way as possible.
Absolutely. Joe, we got one more minute. Anything else we should know?
Well, I would just close with one thing about the Labor Network for Sustainability and the work we're doing on climate change. And that is to say that, you know, when you and I first started talking on this show about this issue, it was several years ago, very few unions were thinking a lot about it. We just saw a march in New York with 400,000 people in the street, 75 to 100 unions in that region and around the country supported that march, local unions, regional, some national. So we're making great progress on that, but the timeline science tells us we're looking at is tight, so we need to step it up.
Absolutely, Joe. And listen, that's laborforsustainability.org. We will get you back on. We'll talk about this. Do me a favor, stay on the line as we transition into break. I've got a couple questions for you. But in the meantime,
sure.
Joe, thank you very much for being with us today. We appreciate it, and we'll get you back soon. It's Joe Uline of laborforsustainability.org, number 4. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. A suspected uranium hexafluoride leak at a Metropolis, Illinois Honeywell uranium conversion plant has sparked a call by the United Steelworkers for an investigation. Honeywell has locked out the USW workers with the skill, experience, and knowledge to run the plant. Workers like local union spokesman John Paul Smith.
Experience matters. You have any experienced team running a nuclear facility right now. You know, people with decades of experience responding to emergencies are on the outside of the plant looking in.
Smith says the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is too cozy with the companies it regulates. When the uranium hexafluoride leaked at the plant, the gas was visible to onlookers, even as the company and the NRC told a different story.
We watch citizens call 911, and those calls basically get ignored because Honeywell, the company, and the NRC was saying that it was under control and it was in-house. People were out there watching the clouds leave the facility. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission that regulates nuclear sites in our country is not funded by the federal government. It's a government agency, but it's not funded by the federal government. It's funded by the licensees, by the sites they regulate. So Honeywell pays the NRC to regulate them. And a lot of people that are on the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, many people end up taking jobs in the industry.
USW Local 7669 will hold another bargaining session with Honeywell November 17th in an effort to reach an agreement and end the lockout. Verdi Union Amazon workers in Germany are striking in 5 locations. The strikes end today. The workers are struggling with Amazon over wages and working conditions. The workers want higher pay to bring them in line with collective bargaining agreements throughout the retail and mail order industry in Germany. Amazon is so far rejecting the demand. Amazon employs some 9,000 German distribution workers. United Auto Workers members at Local 2387 in Lebanon, Ohio, voted to accept a contract deal ending a long lockout. The vote ratifying the contract proposal was reportedly by just 13 votes. The workers have been locked out since June, twice before they rejected proposed deals. Concessions were part of the contract, no more company matches for 401ks, and higher health insurance premiums. But a proposed wage cut was rejected. By November 3rd, the workers are all expected to be back at work. Wisconsin Jobs Now is suing Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker over the minimum wage. The group found an old state law that requires that the minimum wage in Wisconsin be no less than the living wage. It's currently $7.25 an hour. A group of workers filed a complaint under the law, but Wisconsin Jobs Now says Walker's quick rejection of the complaint, with no real investigation, is in itself a violation of the law. Walker is calling the suit a cheap political stunt. You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Imagine me, a dog, moving in with a human. I didn't know how it would work. Turns out, my human's pretty entertaining. For instance, every time I give my human his ball, he throws it as far as he can. And I'm like, dude, that's your ball. So I go get it, but he just throws it. Again! I gotta say, though, the more he does it, the funnier it is. I love my human.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Hi, I'm LeVar Burton, and I'm proud to be a book person. How do I choose a book? Sometimes it's the cover, sometimes it's the title. I guess I'm pretty visual. If a book's really impressing me and the writing is really good, I will peek and see what the last paragraph is, because the endings of books should rock you. I am a book person, and if you're a book person too, read to a child and spark a lifetime of ambition. Join me at bookpeopleunite.org, because reading is fundamental. A public service announcement brought to you by Reading is Fundamental, Library of Congress, and the Ad Council.
You must be your fairy godmother.
Cinderella's dream comes true because the glass slipper fits.
It fits.
In our world, the right fit can be just as important, especially when it comes to car seats. Always choose a car seat that's the right fit for your child's age and size to make sure your little pumpkin gets there safely every time.
Hop in, dear.
Thank you.
For more information, visit safercar.gov/the right seat. This message has been brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Confusion ever someone or have sudden...
Have you ever had sudden confusion, trouble speaking, or understanding someone?
It could be one of the five signs of stroke.
Sudden weakness or numbness of the face, arm, or leg.
Sudden trouble with vision in one or both eyes.
Suddenly having trouble walking or difficulty with balance.
Or a sudden intense headache that comes out of nowhere.
Don't wait. Call 911 immediately.
Time lost is brain lost.
Find out more at powertoendstroke.org. Brought to you by the American Heart Association, American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor Stock Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. We appreciate it. Please follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just type in the Union Edge. Joining us by phone, we've got Frank Emspach of Workers Independent News. Frank, welcome back.
Be back. Although it is a nail biter of a week, I have to say that.
It is. It is.
It is. We're out here in Wisconsin. And the polling showed Mary Burke, who is supported by the Democrats and most of labor, and Scott Walker, who has, of course, done his best to destroy the public sector unions here. The overall polling shows them even. That's fine. These are polls of registered voters. But when the polling was done yesterday of those most likely to vote, Scott Walker was ahead 50-43. Now, that 7% is very, very hard to make up, but it represents people who were going to vote. In other words, the turnout is the issue. If the Democrats turn out at the same rate of the Republicans, they win. And the Republican turnout rate, that is, those voters most likely to vote, was 92%. The Democrats are something like 86%. So what that means is that unless people go vote, we're going to be in trouble in this state. And then it turns out that we talked to people all over the country yesterday. I talked to people in Washington, D.C. and in New York and other places. It's the same kind of thing. If you poll generally, the Republicans go down. If you say who is going to vote, well, that's another story. So what it comes down to now is the importance of working people, the importance of labor unions as an organizing structure, the strength of the candidates actually speaking directly to labor's issues. And now, of course, are people going to go vote? Is it possible for the labor movement to mobilize at the same rate as the right-wing Republicans? And so that's where it's at, as far as I can see.
You're right, Frank. people have to make the decision for themselves. Am I happy with the way things are? Am I happy with the status quo? Or am I not happy with the status quo? If you're not happy with the status quo and you don't go to vote, guess what? It's going to get worse. That's all there is to it.
Now you got that. You're going to go down the tube. So I think what it is that I'm not sure what is preventing people. I mean, here in this state where it's been polarized for years, you know, it's amazing to me that there's 120,000 confused voters. But aside from that, why aren't people who are unhappy going out there? And I think people are depressed. I think we've heard, go vote, go vote, go vote, and it'll make a difference for many years. And people voted in some cases. They voted for the president. Mm-hmm. They voted in 2012 for the president. And nothing changed as far as they were concerned, because many of these things are dealt with at a state level, and you had these very, very conservative people in office doing everything possible to undermine anything progressive in their state, starting with the right to vote.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm looking at the polling right now, and since October 1st, and even tail end of September, 1st of October, through now, it's been one back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Over the last week or so, it seems to have taken a little bit of a tick with Marquette University's poll. So I'm not sure, you know, is that an outlier or what? But it seems to...
To their polling. See, Marquette was polling registered voters up until last week. And then the poll this weekend that they did was people most likely to vote. And that is, so they call up and say, you're going to vote? And, well, I don't know. So then they don't go into the most likely category. The person says, yeah, I'm going to vote. And then they say, well, who are you going to vote for, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so of likely voters, that is the danger here, because it says that unless the Democrats get their vote out, they're going to lose.
Well, and we've said it and we've talked about it. And if you are happy with the status quo, if you're happy with the direction that your state, your community, your area is going, then don't go vote, because those people in power, if you don't go vote, are going to stay in power.
Well, the problem that we found, and again, talking to activists around the country in the last couple of days, is that they are concerned that a number of people who express great disagreement with the way things are not going to vote. They are depressed. They're not going to make any difference. They're not coming out. And I think that is a real, sort of a dagger to the heart here. You can have as many people have an opinion that's negative for the Republicans as you want, but if there's no expression in the voting box, then in the ballot box, then we're going to keep it. So I just am saying, in terms of how we analyze the situation, it isn't enough that people are opposed to the Republican Party or opposed to their policies. The fact that there's no organizational expression of that is the key. And I think I was talking to somebody yesterday who was, I don't want to get involved in the specific race, but said, well, one of the problems is that the Democratic candidate was pretty weak and faced with a firebrand type Republican. Well, you know, that weak candidate was the party's choice, and there's nothing we can do about that now. But the fact of the matter is, if people in that district don't go out and vote, they're going to wind up with another Michelle Bachmann. And I don't think anybody in that particular state really wants that. But again, if people who don't want it are just upset for other reasons, then they're going to get it. And I think that's true here in Wisconsin. A lot of people are upset with Governor Walker for a whole variety of reasons. Rural funding of school, funding for rural schools and so forth. But if that group doesn't go out and vote, then they're going to have the same problem, except worse, in the next legislative session.
Right. Well, Frank, you know, and I know, it's very easy to organize a workplace if people are dying on a daily basis, or if people are being injured on a daily basis, or people are being harmed on a daily basis. What our job is, your job, my job, and everybody else's job within the labor movement, is get people to move to action before the work site disintegrates to that. So what we have to do is we have to figure out the way between now and this coming Tuesday on how we motivate people to get out and vote. What is your suggestion?
Well, my suggestion is to speak to the issues as clearly as possible so that people see the contrast and understand specifically how a particular issue hurts them. For instance, sometimes it's easy to talk about a sales tax, you know, and solving everybody's problems and nobody really sees it and so on and so forth. A better way of talking about it might be that the sales tax is an aggressive tax that hurts working people more than anybody else because you pay the same as a wealthy person, except the wealthy have more money, and so you're hurt. We might want to say, well, yes, the economy looks good if you're a millionaire, since their stocks went up 137% since 2008, and your wages have fallen or been stagnant. You want to keep the same thing? Good, vote for these folks. And so I think people have to be pretty clear, and I'm not sure that the clarity is there in much of the reporting. I listened to CNN this morning, for example, for 24 minutes, of which 12 minutes, four three-minute segments, were commercials. So you can't get any information under those circumstances. And so if we as radio people really have to be out there clearly with what's going on and encourage everybody to really pay attention. There's no other way to do it. If you're in a fog, you're not going to make it here, and because there are other people who aren't in a fog who are out there with a hammer to bash your brains in, and that's what's happening.
There you go, Frank. Frank, thanks for being with us today. We appreciate it. How do we find out more about you and Workers Independent News?
Well, just go to your organization. But just go to our website, Workers Independent News, www.laborradio.org. Go to the Daily Cost now and look in the labor section. There we are. And, I think listen to your show. We're on often. We like being on there. We do news. You do a broader thing because you can talk to more people over a longer period of time. But anyway, we're on your operations, seven stations more now, I think?
22, Frank, 22.
22, wow. That is phenomenal. And I guess, you know, your efforts, I think, are the type of thing that we need to get out to vote. If people don't hear anything, then I think it's not going to work.
Absolutely, Frank, and we got to get going. I appreciate your time. That was Frank Emsbach of Workers Independent News. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor Talk Radio.